On today's show, I share my methodology for learning any new skill. We talk about socially responsible investing and then share a huge tip on how to craft the perfect resume. Welcome to the Ultimate Crowdsource Personal Finance Show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Guys, super excited to dive into this past week's episode. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, doing great. Just got back from a big three-day weekend at my daughter's swim meet and just kind of back in action. It looks like spring may have sprung here finally. I think it was like 65 degrees yesterday. So yeah, life is good.
I refuse to believe any announcement that like spring has come until like the end of March. If you're telling me mid-March that winter is over, I'm just going to laugh at you. There will be something else. I will lose power one more time. There will be one more blizzard. I don't know. You can't predict it, but winter never goes easily, never goes away quietly here in Virginia.
Yeah, I hear you. But so what's going on in your life?
Well, the biggest thing is over the past 2 months, I had started playing piano again. And I've really, this is interesting. I took 3 years as a kid, walked away because I thought it was boring. Never like, it just didn't hold my interest. And, you know, whatever the circumstances behind that were, I just walked away and didn't look back at it. Now I'm in my mid 30s. So this is quite literally 20 years later, two decades later. And suddenly I have like this itch to scratch. I want to learn this skill. And, you know, I'm less than like 1A. Like if this is Kramer and Seinfeld, I'm like the white belt, right? You know, but I got books 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, working through the Disney songs right now. And I realize I am loving this. And then right behind that, on the backside of that kind of realization that finally it's clicking, I realized that I think I've become a Renaissance man. And I actually had to go look at the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition of that term. But to read it to you, it is a person who has wide interests and is an expert in several areas. Now that last half is debatable, right? I'm like level 1A, level 2A, but my interest, it hasn't slowed down. I keep tackling something and then finding, wow, this is fun. And I'm getting a little bit of progress in this area. And then I start adding something onto that. And honestly, there's a little bit of a problem here because even when you free up massive amounts of time, like, you know, we have been able to over the last couple of years, you still only have so much time. You can't do everything, but you really can do anything when you're able to, you know, reclaim a significant amount of your time through the pursuit of financial independence.
Oh, Jonathan, I'm chuckling on the inside here. I don't think anybody...
Not just on the inside.
No, on the outside too. Oh, I don't think anybody's ever self-proclaimed themselves a Renaissance man before, but I hear you. You are the prototypical talent stacker. That is clearly what you are. And I mean, could you have ever imagined 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or your 15-year-old self, this would be your life someday?
No, and even 2 or 3 years ago, to be honest with you, as a human being with obligations, things that you have to do, it's kind of scary, the idea of learning something new, like really learning it, not just in passing, but then actually tackling a skill. So many of us say, well, if I just had time, then I would actually go deeper in the weeds and I would figure out how to do this. And then, you know, we have like a superficial amount of time, but learning a new skill, whatever that skill is, rarely is something that you just do in passing. You need to commit to it. And even when it kind of, you start and you realize, oh, wow, this isn't as easy as it looks on that, you know, viral video, then you need to work through those things and you have to be willing to accept both your current limitations and prepare for growth. There's some resistance baked into that equation. And what I found is just by virtue of having been able to design a lifestyle, I'm able to selectively take these projects and get better at them. Not better to maybe by other people's standards, but by my standards, I can see progress over time. And that becomes a virtuous circle. The feedback loop is created and then you, that confidence that you get from this one talent that you've been able to build spills over and you can start tackling something else. And I look back at the things that I've attempted within the last 2 years and they're as a child, as a teenager, as someone in my early 20s, there was no future where I imagined actually being able to do all this stuff. I just simply didn't have time.
Yeah. So Jonathan, for the audience, let's talk like actionable stuff here. I mean, you were a pharmacist 3 years ago, 2 years ago, obviously, or less. But I mean, you were a full-time pharmacist with no thought of any of this stuff. And you have self-taught yourself skills that even if ChooseIfI stopped tomorrow, which obviously, hopefully it will never stop, but even if ChooseIfI stopped tomorrow, you have skills that you could probably earn a boatload of money just as a video editor or a podcast editor or all these random things. Talk us through video editing specifically, because I think like not only have you self-taught yourself, but I think aren't you teaching your brother how to do this too?
Yeah, I am. You know, it was funny. So my brother went to school for biology. He has a job in that field working in a lab here in Richmond, Virginia. You know, it seems to be going pretty well, but like he's kind of, I could always tell he's kind of that talent stacker kind of guy too. He wants to take an electronic and fix it. He wants to repair something. He wants to learn how to do square foot gardening and community garden beds and just all sorts of really interesting stuff. And I knew that he was also interested in some of the things that I'd been working on as well. So he came over on a weekend. I had him work on a project for us. And in that weekend, I showed him how to use basically the entire Adobe suite, you know, which is Photoshop, After Effects, Illustrator, and Premiere. And we had him take a project beginning to end, learn how to do multi-camera video editing. So you'd have multiple cameras, you have to be able to color grade them, match them up. You have to then be able to sync the audio with those different cameras. You have to be able to get them all in a timeline, learn how to do transitions, add in some different effects, bring in some Illustrator files, create a finished product. And we tackled this from beginning of Friday to the end of Sunday. He put something like 40 something hours in. And if you were a very polished high level video editor, I'm sure you could have done this in less than five, but this was the learning process. Each part of this was actually tackling a new set of the puzzle, a new piece of the puzzle. And by the end of it, you know, he'll never look at it the same way. Like this is a skill that he can use for the rest of time with all sorts of other projects. So that was like 6 months of my life figuring out all these different things. But the best way,
Jonathan, yeah. Hold on. I want to jump in there. Cause this is, if I was a listener, this is what I'd want to dive in on. There are people out there listening who are like, wow, I want to create this talent stack and this video editing, all these things Jonathan just mentioned, they sound interesting. We had Grant Sabatier on and he learned how to do AdWords in a month. How did you learn how to do that? Literally, like, I don't know. I mean, all of a sudden you were an expert in this, but like someone out there is listening. Do you have, you know, not a 10-minute explanation, obviously, but just a quick, these were the couple of important things I learned and I found them by Googling or I found this course. Like, is there anything like that?
Man, sandbag me, Brad, here on the spot. Okay.
You bet, buddy. You bet. That's what I'm here for.
It's coming back at me. All right. Well, I'm going to try and give it short and sweet. It starts first. Are you willing to ask questions? You know-it-alls rarely find new information. That's just like a guiding light. So I am not a know-it-all. I'm a person that has tons of questions. I had this list of questions, right? I wanted to create this product and there were all these different techniques that I could tell were being used. Multi-camera editing, color grading. That's something that I didn't even know what it was. And apparently it's the way that the color that's actually applied to your footage. And you can think of examples like The Matrix or Mad Max or whatever. Most movies have some select colors that are added to add to the theme of the movie. Multi-camera editing, tying your cameras together, green screens, adding effect, motion graphics, all these different things. What I did is I figured out, first of all, what do I want this final product to look like? And then I broke it down into its smaller parts. And then I figured out for each of those parts, whether it be one of the techniques I just mentioned or something else, what is the actual question? And the question can be very simple. How to do multicam editing, how to sync your audio. I started with YouTube and actually I started with Google. I usually ended up at YouTube and sometimes in YouTube, it just didn't work or it was such a complex problem. It was a multi-part question. When that didn't work, I leaned on another platform. And there's a few out there that to me are really cool. One is Udemy and one is Skillshare. With those two platforms, what's cool about it is it builds on top of itself. So with YouTube, you have to really know what the question is, right? You have to absolutely be precise in order to get that good answer. And you have to be able to think of all those things that might send the answer in different directions. With Skillshare, it's more like taking a class on a very focused topic. So in my case, let's expand this out. I very recently did one on how to do some coding with HTML and CSS and a few of other things. And you have to start with your building blocks and work your way up. Skillshare is amazing for that. If there's drawing and there's a technique and you want to build one topic on top of the next. Skillshare or Udemy can be absolutely amazing for that. So what you have to do is kind of think about, what is this question? Does it have a multi-part answer, or is it very mercenary, go in and grab it and get out? That can kind of steer you with, you know, one towards YouTube, and one, if it's more, it's like a class with topics that are going to build on itself, can kind of steer you to one of these other platforms. And then be willing to lean on other sources. Sometimes the best way to get an answer, especially if it's kind of inside of an ecosystem of larger problem, is to join a group that's focused on this. So for instance, with website editing, or with using different sorts of plugins or other things, you know, there are groups dedicated to the resolution of these types of problems. You should be in a group like that. If you're a podcaster, you should be in a podcast group. If you're a wedding photographer, you should be in a wedding photographer group, because you will be able to get techniques. You'll be able to shorten the learning curve. You don't always want to learn from your own mistakes. How valuable is it to be able to learn from someone else's mistakes, right? And because they're documenting it, they're saying, hey, I spent weeks trying to sort this out and it was a train wreck until I figured out this. Well, just tell me that. I don't want to go through the weeks. I just want to do this. And you get enough of those stacked together to speed up your own process to a really polished product.
Yeah, Jonathan, that is awesome. That's really valuable information, because you have picked up dozens of new skills. And as you say, kind of jokingly, become a Renaissance man here. That's such a cool thing. I mean, really, what you've done over the last 2 years is nothing short of remarkable. And for anybody looking to pick up skills, be a curious person and ask tons of questions. Break it down to its component parts is ultimately what you're saying. Figure out, you don't know what you don't know. But once you can break it down into these parts, then you can go out and search that information. And then there are places, YouTube is the most obvious, Google, Udemy and Skillshare is fantastic. Learn from others. Where do you find communities? You can find them many places, but Facebook groups are a pretty obvious place to start. So, I mean, that is a great breakdown on how do you pick up a new skill. And for everybody out there, you should be adding to your talent stack. What lights you up? What are you excited about learning? Use Jonathan's framework here on how to pick up a skill. He's done it. Jonathan was a pharmacist 2 years ago, and now look at what he's become. It's amazing. It really is.
And I wanted to add on to that, Brad, that if you go to college for something, like something to get a degree in something, if you get a high school degree, if you get an associate's degree, a bachelor's, a doctorate, whatever it is, if you can apply yourself to learn something that you probably weren't super interested in, it's just what you did, right? Because you got to go to college, get that job. For many of us, college was a stepping stone to a job. If you can apply yourself with that amount of intensity to get a degree, you can certainly learn anything that you're interested in if you apply yourself with the same level of dedication. And it's so much easier because, leaning on the first half of that sentence, you were interested in it to begin with. That is incredible. That's what opens us up. That's why, with so many people in the FI community, when you're in the community, you see this from the outside. It's kind of one of these questions. What are you going to do with all your free time? The counterpoint being, how did I ever have time for a 9-to-5? Because it's truly interest-led learning. And when we talked to Talat, his interest for him and his family, for him and Ty, their interest was building a legacy of wealth for multiple generations, right? I mean, going back to this past week's episode that we did, when you think about where him and his family are now compared to where he started at the beginning of this journey with financial infidelity, it is the most inspirational story imaginable.
Yeah, this was really cool. And yeah, he said they want to create a legacy of wealth. I know you just said that, but it bears repeating. A legacy of wealth for their children, right? Their children, they expect to be the third generation of McNeelys to have no house debt. What a cool thing. They're talking about that we went from homeowners to the owners of our home. And I just love that play on the words there. That was so cool, because really, most people who are homeowners, they own a tiny little fraction of their house and the bank owes the rest. In essence, they're paying interest that's just rent in a different phrase, right? But they became the owners of their home. And I know we talk a lot back and forth about this in the FI community. Should I pay off the mortgage? Should I not? There's no doubt that Talat and Ty are thrilled that they paid this off. And I mean, can you imagine the memories? Like he said, they have this recorded for posterity on video of them going in there, the family all dressed up and paying this thing off. And what an amazing day that must have been for them as a nuclear family, and then for their legacy for generations to come. I mean, that is a cool thing, to create a moment in time like that where you can look back. I don't have any moments in time like that, Jonathan. I don't know. I can't imagine you do either, but what a neat thing, right?
Honestly, his best quote in the episode was, you can't put that feeling in a calculator. That's not quantifiable. what they pulled off, and this is the X factor to the paying off the mortgage for them. And this is why it's situational. Not everybody will have that same calling, but if you have that pull to be done with it, to not have it on your ledger at all, you can't put that feeling in a calculator. Wow. And to see how that has charted a course for the next generation of McNeelys is absolutely undeniable. And I agree with you, Brad. I had my opportunity to have that type of moment. And to be honest with you, I kind of squandered it. Like, I paid off my student loan debt. And by the time I was kind of done with it, I just kind of like, I didn't make a big deal out of it. I just kind of sent the last payment in. And I think now, like, what a freaking missed opportunity. You should celebrate. That was an accomplishment. That was a 4-year accomplishment of a similar magnitude to what they pulled off with the home. And I just sent it in. I didn't sell. I don't think I really celebrated it at all. It was just kind of, eh, all right, I'm done. But it was massive. It's a massive deal to get rid of massive amounts of student loan debt. And I hope other people do a better job than I did with that celebration, because really, when you get rid of consumer debt, or in their case, a more extreme example, you decide to pay off this mortgage and you don't have any debt at all. Really, I mean, if I look back, I'm having this conversation to you now. I'm talking about the privilege of becoming a Renaissance man now because I don't have any consumer debt. I mean, that really is it. Although I kind of let that moment pass me by and I didn't really like take the time it deserved to, you know, summer of George, make it rain for a week and celebrate. It really was that important of an event in my life. And it did everything that we're talking about now is possible because I first got rid of all of that debt.
Yeah. And what a powerful thing that is to not have that hanging over your head. We've talked over and over again how it just gives you options. It's a similar aspect with FI. When you cut your expenses, when you make your life just not cost that much, you have so many more options. And Jonathan, you yet again are a perfect case study of this, right? When you left your job as a pharmacist to pursue Choose a FI full time, you were able to cover your life's expenses. And that's all that really mattered, right? You had cut your expenses to the bone and you had made this possible to have options. I think both you and Talon and Ty here, whether you've said it explicitly or not, you set this goal to pay this thing off, to pay your $168K in student loans off. They set a more explicit goal to pay their mortgage off in 5 years. A quote that I loved, he said, "We are goal setting people." What a cool thing that is. We are goal setting people. And I think there's a lot to that. And I've talked with my wife, Laura, about this, about paying off our mortgage. And just not that I really want to desperately or think that it's the right mathematical decision, but I would love the goal of it, to see that number go down, to be able to send extra payments if I could every month or whatever it may be, and to see that balance drop. And who knows, maybe we set some audacious goal like 5 years or something like that. I don't know if that would be possible in my situation, but maybe, who knows? Did they think it was possible when they sent $20, Jonathan, $20 extra for their first mortgage payment? They only had 60 months. That's a pretty abbreviated time. 60 months to pay that thing off in 5 years, you've got to pay oodles of money extra every month. They paid $20. That's all they had. But they made this their goal, their entire life's goal, their family's goal, to do what they had to do. If that meant picking up extra income, cutting expenses, finding things to sell, right? Like, you reach your goal because that is your goal. We are goal setting people. It bears repeating a third time. That's amazing. I just love that. It speaks to me. It really does.
Oh, I can see the accountant brain versus the human brain are fighting each other on this particular answer, Brad. It'll be interesting to see what you and Laura come up with. But obviously, I think you at this point, just because, I mean, here's the key. And I think people hear us say, you know, whether you pay off your mortgage, whether you don't pay off your mortgage, you know, we're a little bit more wishy-washy on it. And maybe someone from the outside is saying, well, why? The choice in Brad's mind isn't, should I pay off my mortgage? Should I save all this extra money, pay off my mortgage, or should I spend all my extra money, right? If those are the two options, it's always pay off your mortgage. But for an individual that's already thinking about life in terms of savings rate, the question is, should I put all of my extra money into my mortgage, or should I put all of my extra money into another solid investment account, investment vehicle? Because that's ultimately what the mortgage is. It is an investment, right? And so for, you know, an optimizer, they're saying, well, my mortgage is locking in a rate of return of, I don't know, 2 to 5%, somewhere in that range. my investments account, I'm expecting them to make somewhere between 4% and 10%, somewhere in that range. You're just kind of looking at the arbitrage and you're making a decision. And then there's some other factors as you go deeper down this rabbit hole. Maybe you're looking at things like sequence of return risk and a few other factors when you're coming up with your final decision. That's the complexity in there. And that's kind of why you hear a little bit of wishy-washiness. Yeah, that's such an interesting phrase, but I'm going to go and roll with it. You know, on this particular episode, maybe why you hear Brad kind of debating it back and forth in his own mind. But I don't think those extra factors, both the arbitrage that I mentioned, the sequence of return risk, it doesn't allow us to quantify the fact that you can't put this feeling in a calculator. That's the part of this that is absolutely missing. And so whatever you're talking about the arbitrage, you're talking about the sequence of return risk, the McNeelys are going to be fine. The McNeelys have a paid off mortgage. They paid off their mortgage at an incredibly young age. It's not like they're just leaving their investments alone. It's not like they haven't been saving other money. And it's not like they're no longer going to earn income. They have a massive runway. They've created a lifestyle that they're incredibly happy with. And they're now that they're kind of turning their focus to this other piece of the puzzle, they are going to do phenomenally well. There are multiple ways of tackling the same equation, and you don't need to make the same choice that Brad is making, and you don't need to make the same choice that the McNeelys made in this particular case. But just knowing the rules and understanding the motivations for these different factors can really help you guide your decision.
Yeah, but Jonathan, we're talking about them today, where they have this legacy for their family and all is amazing, but it didn't start there. And that is a pretty wild thing when you think about this financial infidelity that they had, where he basically hid this debt from Ty right up until their marriage, essentially just a couple weeks before he finally told her. He said he confessed and he said it wasn't necessarily the dollars and cents. It was the trust. I broke her trust. She didn't know if she could trust me. That was the big problem. It wasn't the money. Money can be fixed. Money can be made. Money can be lost. But trust is something that once it's broken, it's hard to put back together. That was a really, really deep quote. And he said they finally did get over this with a whole lot of talking, a whole lot of being transparent. And she saw that he was for real. I think that was a crucial thing here. He wound up getting a second job. He was learning everything he could about personal finance, and he was trying to get better. And I mean, it's easy to pay lip service, like, oh, I'm going to try to get better. But the proof is in the pudding. And he actually went to bat and tried to make not only his financial life work, but most importantly, his life with Ty, because that truly was what mattered to him.
And you know, Brad, taking a second to actually look at that financial infidelity, what was amazing and honestly critical about their particular situation is he really wanted to bring this history to her. He really wanted to be on the same page. That's why now, because he did that, we're talking about his and her money. For so many couples, unfortunately, that is not the case. In fact, we've even highlighted in past episodes a situation where you had a couple that was dealing with financial infidelity and the partner was actively saboteuring any attempt to actually get back on the same page. So I think there's different levels of this, and some financial infidelity can be worked through with open lines of communication. Doesn't mean that it's going to be an easy conversation. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have to rebuild that trust. And what Ty actually did was incredible, working with Talat to actually rebuild this trust, rebuild these lines of communication. It's why their story is so full of hope. And I hope as many people as possible, if you're going to deal with financial infidelity, this is the type of financial infidelity that you're cleaning up. It's a type where you're coming together and you're working through it together. Because when you have that situation, regardless of what happened, there is hope. When you have a partner that's actively going behind your back and undoing all of your progress intentionally, then it's a much darker and more depressing situation. And Brad, the final part of this episode that I thought we should just take a few minutes and talk about was actually his reference to the book by Elizabeth Warren, The Two Income Trap. Now, I don't think you had read that book or even heard of that book up to that point. Am I correct about that?
No, I'd never heard of it. And it was interesting, actually, that you pulled that from the recesses of your mind, that you had read that previously, and it made a real impact on you. And even though I had not read it, it was interesting to hear a quote from Talat that said, they built their life based on one income. And I think what's interesting to me personally is that that's what Laura and I did from really the very first of us getting married and moving down here to Richmond, Virginia. We had anticipated that Laura was going to stay home with our future kids. At that point, they were future fictional kids. But we had built our life around not only living off of my income, but living off of my income and still pursuing FI. So that was the background. It was essentially living off probably a quarter of our what was then our current income, right? Because we had two salaries and we were still saving a significant amount. And then we had planned to cut that in half, essentially, when our first child was born sometime in the future, and still save money. Now, obviously, we're not going to be able to save 70% of our income, but we still knew how essential that was to us because we were on this path unknowingly at that point. We didn't know FI existed, but we knew we needed to and wanted to save money. That was critical to us. So we created this life for ourselves that only needed one income because while in the background for many people, it's, okay, what if you lose a job? I knew that from also the very first at my first day on my job at Arthur Andersen, way back when in 2001, this is really dating myself here, but I went to work for what was the most reputable accounting firm in the world. And because of this crazy Enron scandal at one little office in Dallas, it brought down the entire accounting firm that I worked for. And it ceased to exist 9 months later. So I knew how quickly this could go away, right? How quickly you could lose your job, even if you do work at this amazing firm or you're doing a great job, right? It's irrelevant. You can lose your job. So you need that safety net. So I think that was probably the first thing, because Laura and I both worked there, that in our minds, we knew how perilous this was to live your life up until needing every dollar of income. Because what happens when some of that income goes away, either unwittingly in the case of losing a job or having a firm collapse, or purposefully in our case of, okay, we want to have Laura stay at home with our future kids, right? So you need to plan. I think that's the key. You need to have a safety net. And FI provides that, and it provided it for us.
That book is incredible. And it goes in a bunch of different directions. But you know, for me, the key was, if you move back in time, if you take a historical look, most lives were built around a single income. And then slowly over time, due to various factors, one of them being lifestyle inflation. If you look at all of our homes in general, our homes are bigger. We have two cars, we have car payments. We have, you can now get payments. You can accessorize your debt at this point in time. And, but anyways, due to various lifestyle factors, the cost of a median lifestyle here in the United States has inflated dramatically. And so to maintain that kind of middle income lifestyle in the United States, it has begun to look more and more like it requires two incomes. And the problem with that, as you are pointing out, Brad, is it's inherently more risky. And this is the key here. If you have to have both people employed in order to maintain your current lifestyle, that means that you have to have both people employed in order to maintain that current lifestyle. So if something happens to either of those jobs, suddenly you're in an existential crisis. Now there's room for optimism here, because just by virtue of the fact of recognizing it, reeling it in, living in within your means on one of those incomes, it very handily resolves the 50% savings rate, right? Or some variation of that. And this is what you did. And it propelled you and Laura to this outcome in a relatively short period of time, even though you didn't both have six-figure incomes. Because you were able to, without even having read this book, realize that that paradigm was in place, you were able to adjust your lifestyle down. And to be honest with you, you kind of had like a stealthy middle-class lifestyle here in the United States. And it didn't look like you and Laura were deprived. I mean, you had a middle-class lifestyle, but just by being a little bit more intentional about it, by driving old cars, by living in a home that was somewhat below your means in terms of what you could actually afford on a mortgage calculator statement, and by the $2 per person per meal rule, you know, just basically focusing on your food bill with a little bit of intentionality, you and Laura were able to save upwards of $3,000 a month that other people simply weren't saving. And if you save $3,000 a month, that's $36,000 a year. You pull that off for 10 to 15 years, you're going to be at financial independence. Especially if you have a modest lifestyle to begin with. It's just incredible the power of making these small choices over time. And so for many people, the strategy is going to change. You know, not everybody is dealing with a dual income situation now, but if you are, it might be worthwhile to look at your current lifestyle and compare that to what is actually covering. If it takes both of your jobs just to cover your current lifestyle, your paycheck to paycheck, it might be time to reevaluate and see what else you can do. All right, guys. Well, I thought we could take the remainder of the show and bring in some feedback and questions and comments from our community. And to help us with this, we have Zach joining us back on the show today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great and good to be back.
What do you got for us today?
All right. So we got Charles from the Facebook group asks, I don't know if anyone else cares about this, so maybe no one has the answer. But any ideas on investing in a good index fund that doesn't have sin stocks? Is this possible? I don't feel like investing in tobacco or alcohol, etc.
All right. This is a great question. And certainly it's one that we see pop up from time to time. And so what I actually did is we reached out to Brian Feraldi, who many of you will remember most recently from our solar panel cost analysis. And before that, episode 75, talking about the unique advantages of the individual investor. He called in a voicemail, which we're going to go ahead and play now.
Hey, Brad and Jonathan, it's Brian Feraldi. I just wanted to reach out to answer a listener question that I saw on the Facebook group regarding socially responsible investing, or SRI. So for those listeners that are new to the concept, socially responsible investing means that you're making investment choices based on your own moral and ethical beliefs. So another term that goes hand in hand with SRI investing is ESG investing. And ESG stands for environmental, social, and corporate governance. So ESG investors look at a company's business practices in detail and rate them based on factors like their carbon emissions, how they treat employees and suppliers, whether they make political contributions, and their executive compensation, things like that. So in this case, the listener asked for a list of index funds that do not invest in sin stocks, which he defined as companies that make money off of alcohol, tobacco, or pornography. So I can't give specific investing advice, but the good news is that SRI investors have tons of choices these days. There's been a huge interest, explosion interest in SRI and ESG investing over the last couple of years, and there are literally hundreds of mutual funds, index funds, and exchange-traded funds for investors to choose from. And I think that the numbers are going to continue to grow because millennials seem to have a huge interest in SRI investing. Before you invest in SRI companies or principals, there's a few things to keep in mind. First and foremost, everybody has their own definition of what qualifies as a sin stock or not. So the listener called out tobacco, alcohol, and pornography companies, but he didn't mention gun makers, defense contractors, oil and gas producers, or casinos, which a lot of other SRI investors consider to be sin stocks. And the lines can get very blurry when you start to go down the rabbit hole. So for example, are companies like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and Nestle sin stocks since they make money off of selling products that are loaded with sugar that are bad for human health? Or how about Wells Fargo that lends money to tobacco and alcohol companies and has also been involved in a massive banking scandal over the last couple of years? Or how about Equifax and its massive data breach? Or how about companies that treat their employees or their suppliers or have poorly and have governance issues? And then you could even say that monopolies like Google that have gotten into huge trouble with regulators for abusing their market powers might be a sin stock. So as you can imagine, the list of companies that you can invest in starts to become very limited depending on how deeply you want to go with your SRI investing principles. But the good news is that you can probably find a fund that matches up with your core beliefs nicely, and you can invest based on the principles that you think are most important. So the best thing to do is to simply use Google or to call or get in touch with your broker. Lots of brokers like Vanguard and Fidelity are riding the SRI wave, and they've created funds of their own that you can invest in directly. So like any investment, before you actually put money in, it's important to look at the fund's expense ratio, its turnover ratio, so you can get an idea of the tax implications, as well as an investing style. I'd also recommend that you look at the fund's performance when compared to an appropriate benchmark over the last, say, 1, 3, and 5 years, so you can see how the fund's style has performed, and you can really get a firm idea of what you're investing in before you do it. Hope this information is helpful, and keep up the great work, guys. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, Brian, thank you so much for the answer. Always greatly appreciate your expertise. And like Brian said, this is a blurry line. I mean, I think if people feel strongly about what they invest in, then there are different levels and layers they can go down and figure out what they feel comfortable. So, I mean, this is not something, honestly, that has ever crossed my plate before, but I see why so many people are passionate about it.
All right, Zach, what else you got for us?
All right, so we got another one from James on the Facebook group. He asks, so after the last few episodes, I've been inspired to start looking for a remote work position, maybe even reach out to some recruiters. I've been with my company for over 7 years, and quite frankly, I don't even know where to start on making an impressive resume. Does anyone have any resources on helping write an appealing resume and places to help you really polish one?
Oh my goodness. I did not know this is the question you're going to ask, but I have the perfect voicemail teed up from this. This is actually from Gwen, who writes over at fiery millennial and also is one of the hosts of the Fire Drill podcast. I don't know how much we'll have to listen to her voicemail to see how much detail she goes into, but she recently moved to the Washington, D.C. area, and she had someone actually help her craft a resume, and it opened up an unbelievable amount of doors. Let's play her voicemail, and then I have probably some additional feedback to add to that.
Hey, Firewalkers. Gwen here from Fire Drill Podcast. You might remember my story from episode 39, where I talked about my hacks for graduating college debt-free. Well, I am back with another hack. Today, I want to talk about the power of networking. I attended Camp Phi SE in Florida 2018 and met a super nice guy. We became Facebook friends and casually kept an eye on what the other was doing. In the fall of 2018, I realized I wasn't meant to be an entrepreneur and started to look at getting back into the corporate world. My new friend reached out to me and told me he had a friend that was really good at writing resumes and would I be interested in hiring her to look over mine. I'm good at a lot of things, but I am not an expert. She is an IT recruiter and knew not only exactly what a good resume looked like, but had hired for my position and thus knew exactly what the ideal resume for the job I wanted looked like. It was like a match made in heaven, so I hired her to revamp my resume the very next day. She asked me a few questions to clarify some things on my resume and my background and gave me a masterpiece in return. After hiring her, I sound and look great to potential employers. She also gave me advice on how to optimize my LinkedIn profile. I got a job within a few weeks and am now getting headhunted for an amazing opportunity with a big tech company. So the point of this voicemail is yes, you can do it yourself and you'll probably be fine. Or you can hire an expert and come away with opportunities of a lifetime. To all of you out there looking for new jobs, good luck. May we all get double-digit increases in pay and decrease our time to financial independence.
And I got to say, just knowing a little bit more about Gwen's story, she spent a relatively small amount of money on getting help with this resume, you know, having this resume rebooted, revamped. But the value for her is going to be multiples, many, many multiples of what she spent on that resume. I mean, it took her and the pay scale that she could command to an entirely different level. I was blown away by this tip, and I think it's going to be useful for our audience as well. You know, Brad, we always say, what is the story you tell yourself about yourself? And what if you have this amazing story, but you can't tell it for whatever reason? You go to write it down on paper and it falls apart. The part about this that's so awesome, you know, when you realize that, is that the story you tell yourself about yourself can be worth tens of thousands of dollars. What if the only thing separating you from making $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a year more was just that you weren't able to tell your story on a resume in a compelling way for a future employer?
Yeah, and it's hard, right, Jonathan? I mean, I actually signed up to be a guest on another podcast today and they asked for a bio and I didn't have a ready-made perfect bio. So I had to sit down and craft the thing with just little snippets of ones that I've made previously. Who knows? Maybe I hire out someone to create the perfect bio for me because I guess I just don't have the words or I don't have them at the ready. So, well, I mean, there's,
I've got good news for you, Brad. I was so amazed by Gwen's voicemail. I reached out to her and said, Gwen, I need to find out who your person is. Who is this person that writes these magical words on paper? And her name is Jules Hahn. She's an IT recruiter out of DC, but she's also really, really good at polishing up and creating resumes. And so we are going to be working with her to help us create you an awesome bio page.
Are you kidding? That's hilarious. Oh, wow.
It's not exactly a resume. See, the thing is, like in your field, in our field, you don't really need a resume so much, but you do need a pretty cool about me page. And you have an awesome about me. I mean, your story, we've talked about it over the last 2 years, is amazing. But your version of your story on paper is not so amazing. So how do we connect that disconnect? And we're going to have Jules help us with that. And for people that are interested, I'll put a link to her LinkedIn profile. I don't know if she has a better way of doing this, but there's actually another point I wanted to make, a subtext to this, specifically with Jules, who did this resume. She's really good at this. And this is a problem that other people have. Imagine that the only difference for an individual between them making $50,000 a year and $80,000 a year is just that they are not able to create their resume in a way that grabs the eye of a recruiter or a future employer. But you are gifted at that. Like, you can do that. Imagine that you can now build your own, like essentially this is what happened. She can now create her own side hustle because she has cultivated this skill set to such an extreme level. And I always want to like tie the threads here because there's so many, there's the aspects of this for the end user. Like, oh my goodness, it's going to cost me $100, a couple hundred dollars, several hundred dollars to create a resume. That's going to be too expensive. I don't want to do that. Right, Brad? But on the other end, what's the other half of that equation? You're not wanting to do that is potentially keeping you from a job that's worth $10, $20, or $30,000 more a year.
Yeah, I mean, this is really a fundamental aspect of FI, in my opinion, is don't be a penny pincher. You have to look for value. This is a bet, ultimately. You're not 100% sure that if you lay out a couple hundred bucks that you're going to make $10,000 extra a year on some new job, but there's a decent likelihood that if you portray yourself in the best possible light, that you can find that next level up. And who knows? Like, to your point, Jonathan, that could be worth potentially tens of thousands of dollars a year. Is that worth the investment of a couple hundred bucks? I mean, this is not about depriving yourself and cutting every last thing out. Like, you have to look for value in your life. And sometimes that means spending money.
And I think that's the interplay, right? I mean, that's why we've landed on value as opposed to just, you know, how can I be as frugal as possible or as cheap as possible? Or how can I be as lavish as possible, right? I mean, where's that intersect? And it seems to be value. And so in Gwen's case, there was an incredible amount of value to outsource this particular job. Gwen is incredible. She has an incredible story. She's done incredible things. It didn't come through on the resume. Jules helped her take it to the next level. And for many of us, when we go through our life and we think about these pain points, I think that there's something worth exploring here.
All right, guys. Did you see the Facebook post by Jasmine?
Yeah, I was hoping we could actually give her a shout out this week. She shared in the group. Can't share this on my timeline, but I'm happy to say that my net worth has crossed the six-figure mark. I never, ever, all caps, thought this would be possible as my net worth was at one point negative six figures. Thank you for the continued motivation to stay the course. Stay the course is right. I mean, you are going to get there tomorrow, the day after, a week later, a month later, you are going to be in better shape than you are today. You're making progress. And it's just know the rules, make small incremental strides, and then have a big smile on your face when you look back and see your progress over time. And what's crazy about this is it just gets easier. When you get to that first six-figure mark, right? That is not a small feat. That is not easy. But when you do it from there on out, you're going to really start to notice compounding. For the first time, compounding is going to seem like a really big deal. And increasingly, as you go down on this journey, it's going to be carrying you to this finish line.
And we had a frugal win of the week from Jimmy.
Yeah, this was awesome. He said, so we got home from vacation the night before last at 2 a.m. to a broken fridge and freezer. Everything inside was ruined. I had to be at work in a few hours, so we decided to deal with it the next day. I assumed my wife would go out and buy us a new fridge, but I got home from work and she had fixed the thing by herself.
Oh my goodness.
She got on the internet, slid that fridge out, and went to work. I can't tell you how much money we've saved over the years just because she DIYs everything. Jonathan, how cool is that? That's got to speak to you, right?
That is incredible. I wonder what was involved. This doesn't sound like it was, you know, just plug it back in. This sounds a little bit more intense. That's amazing. You know, if you, just for our group, we do actually have a DIY group as one of our community groups. So going back to the beginning of the episode, you want to learn a new skill, whether it be repairing your car, repairing your fridge, doing something around the house. There are people in this group that are also interested in this type of activity and are sharing these type of information. And in many cases, just sharing resources that they've leaned on. So that could be a good place if you want to tackle some of these. We just rolled out a massive upgrade to the local groups that I wanted to mention to you. If you go to chooseify.com/local, we have over 200 groups all around the world. But what we've added is actually a option now to find the five closest groups to you. So, you know, it used to be, it wasn't super difficult. Find your country, find your state, find your city, you know, kind of a multi-step process. Now on most browsers, it will just predict for you the most likely closest five local groups in your area. So you can pick the ones that work for you. And if there's not one in your area and you do want to get involved in a local group, we can definitely help set one up. Just send us an email to feedback@chooseify.com. Letting us know, you know, where you are in the world, and we would love to help you get one started.
And yeah, Jonathan, when you go to chooseify.com/local, there'll be a couple different options. You can click on cohort groups, and that's what you're talking about here with there's this DIY group, there's a business owners, a book club, educators, expats, families, federal employees. There's a whole bunch. I can't list them all now, but there are a bunch of these different groups. So in addition to your actual local group in your geographic area, there are these cohort groups as well. So yeah, definitely check them out.
And, you know, speaking of the local groups, every week we're trying to talk about some of the, you know, biggest events going on in the FI community. And actually, this is actually interesting, Brad. This past week, I was in D.C. where we had, I was meeting with Grant and Cody, who are on their Financial Freedom book tour. They're doing like something like 40 something stops over the next several months. I joined our Choose a FI local group in D.C. and then Grant and Cody, and there were over 150 people there. I think we had the top of this brewery from like 7. It was supposed to be 7 to 10. We ended up going 7 to midnight. It was an awesome event. I had to mention this just because they're actually doing this book tour from the back of a VW van. So if you spot this VW van traveling around the country, definitely tag us on our Instagram or Twitter feed on that. That was pretty cool. They're doing a bunch of meetups, and I'm sure you can find out all the information, but I just wanted to give this shout out real quick because it's coming up this week. They're going to be in Alabama on the 17th, and they're going to be doing an event with the Choosify Birmingham group, the local group there. So if you're interested, definitely go check out the Choosify Birmingham group for more details on that. There were actually 5 or 6 new Facebook groups that were started this past week. One in Fredericksburg, Virginia, who I actually met the admins for that group at this past week's meetup. There's a new group in Perth, Australia, Grand Forks, North Dakota, which was the final state that was missing a local group. So now every state in the United States has a local group, and Traverse City, Michigan. So the San Diego event had 50 plus people at the March 10th meeting. The agenda included the basics of index investing, cybersecurity, and sustainability on the path to financial independence. All the speakers were actually members of the group. The Seattle group has a meeting scheduled on March 23rd, and they're going to be nerding out on travel rewards with actually Ed, who works with us here at ChooseFI as our chief operating officer. He's going to be talking about the 10 best redemptions from Seattle. And Brad, I have to set this up by saying that as good as you are at travel rewards, and you're amazing, I don't think there's anyone better on the planet on travel rewards than Ed. This guy takes everything to the absolute next level.
Yeah, I think that pretty much encapsulates Ed as a person, right? Not just with travel rewards. But yeah, I mean, this is a great idea for a local meetup, just to have like, okay, what are travel rewards redemptions in your area? Undoubtedly, there are many travel rewards experts in our ChooseFI local groups. Make this an event. Instead of it just being just generic, here's what you need to do to earn free travel generally, let's talk about your local area. So that's neat. And yeah, just to talk about Ed for a second, his family, they went on a 5+ month trip to Asia, and they saw dozens of different locations. I think it was basically all business class flights and I think 150 plus days in hotels. The thing basically cost him nothing. It probably would have, the rack rate of this would have been well over $100,000. And I think they spent just a couple thousand in ancillary fees and such. But I mean, talk about a trip of a lifetime just for a few thousand dollars. That's really pretty cool.
All right. There's a few other really cool events going on this week. ChooseFI Idaho's meeting is on March 16th in Boise. Western Massachusetts is having their second meetup on March 23rd. Indianapolis is meeting on March 16th. ChooseFI Ventura in San Francisco Valley also on the 16th, and Northern New Jersey on the 21st. So lots of really, really cool activity going on in the community. And definitely, if you haven't already joined a local group, you can find a local group near you by going to choosefi.com/local. All right. Well, unfortunately, that's going to bring this episode to a close. Now, as you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. And there's 3 books that we offer. The first is J.L. Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth. The second is Dominic Cortuccio's book, Design Your Future. And the third book, Freelance to Freedom by Vincent Puglisi. If you want to enter the drawing, all you need to do is just go to choosefi.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there, and leave us a short written review, and then send us an email to feedback@choosefi.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. We give away 1 book for every 5 written reviews that we get, and we announce a winner on the Friday roundup. Brad, how many winners do we have today?
All right, Jonathan, we have 1 winner today, and the winner is Dave.
And Dave says, America's go-to FI podcast. Brad and Jonathan, I wanted to start out by saying your podcast has forever changed my life and the lives of my children's children. I've been listening to your podcast for the past year and have taken action on many of the things talked about in order to forever change my future. When I first started listening, I realized that life is so much bigger than just running on the hamster wheel 5 days a week. I desired to be free from debt, my W-2 job, and life's curveballs. And your podcast has helped guide and steer me on a path towards this freedom. I can't thank you guys enough for what you have done. Keep up the great work. The fire is spreading in more ways than you know. Best regards, Dave. All right, my friends, I'm excited for what this journey, the opportunities that this journey will spark in your life. Thank you so much for joining us. The fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast. where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.